Hello and welcome to another episode of Open Floor, special playoff micropod here. We're going to try and keep it tight. It's approaching midnight on the East Coast. And Ben, how are you feeling after Spurs Thunder, man?
I'm feeling pretty incredible. I mean, what a 24-hour period here. We've got Steph Curry resurrecting into MVP form. We've got Tim Duncan on the brink, potentially, of retirement. We've got Russell Westbrook running the gamut from the good, the bad, and the ugly.
I can't believe Russ. I cannot believe Russ. I'm sitting here in shock.
And even more shocking is that Deion Waiters and Enes Kanter are both good now. Like, what is happening? I mean,
yeah, I don't know. It's pretty wild. I think Waiters showing up the way he has the past two games, I people would have predicted the series differently if they knew that he was going to be dependable. And even the forearm shiver was dependable. They didn't call it. So it is what it is. I mean, I don't know. I cannot believe that the Thunder were able to come back. So full disclosure, here's how my night went. I was out living my normal life like a regular person and could not watch the game. I had a prior commitment. And so I came back and watched it on TiVo and was able to, for the first time in my life, or I DVR'd it for the first time in my life, I was able to record the game without any spoilers. And so I watched the second half, and the Spurs were up 13 at one point, and I was like, well, this is a waste of my time. I might as well just fast forward, but I stuck with it. But to see the Thunder come back from down 13 in the third quarter on the road, I mean, I just did not think that they had that in them.
The Spurs have done a terrible job all series long of protecting their leads, really since game one, which was clearly sort of the anomaly at this point. I thought this series was going to play out much more, you know, closer to the game one advantages that San Antonio showed, and it just hasn't. When they get up, they can't hold a lead. And, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, for all his early success, you know, now he's quieted down, come back to earth a little bit. If it wasn't for Kawhi Leonard putting together an incredible offensive night in this game, who knows what the result would have been. And then what's going on with Tony Parker? I mean, going back to last year in the FIBA Basketball World Cup, I mean, I was kind of predicting that he would be the weak link for the Spurs this season. It hasn't totally played out like that because Duncan's not really giving them very much, and Danny Green was so hit and miss earlier in the season. But he was bad tonight, and bad in a way that he really, I think, down the stretch cost them the game. Because, you know, the sort of retroactive analysis is that Russell had such an amazing, you know, athletic, energetic performance in this game. But there were some bad turnovers late, as always. I mean, there were some mistakes. There was that crazy bailout call, or non-call, I guess, with the Kawhi Leonard tackling Westbrook late. I mean, that game was right there for the taking for San Antonio. And to me, Tony Parker just pissed it away.
Yeah, I mean, Tony's old. Like, he's showed up more than I think a lot of people expected him to this year. But I think part of what you're seeing is that the Spurs don't have like a go-to scorer late. I mean, Kawhi showed up, I mean, and was great. But at the same time, like at the end of the game, they had to go to Tony Parker because that's the guy that can create his own shot. And it didn't work out because Tony Parker's not that guy either. But I think what's caught me off guard more than anything is to watch the Spurs. They're so out of sync offensively, and I don't think anybody would have expected that. It doesn't honestly make sense. Maybe they were relying too much on LaMarcus or Leon, and now that's sort of taking them out of their rhythm. But like, I mean, I'm biased because I just profiled Boris Diaw, but I think that they need to inject Boris, Manu, anybody who can get the ball moving more than it has been, because it just doesn't, they don't look like the Spurs right now.
Totally. And here's one of the reasons why. I mean, they're stuck playing big because Kanter, like I was kind of joking earlier, he's actually been really good in this series. I mean, he is pounding the glass. They're getting tons and tons of offensive rebounds. They're extending possession sometimes three and four times, which is just unheard of against San Antonio. I mean, their defense was so good this year. Their defensive rebounding on paper looks so good. They've got all the length in the world. They're smart. They're disciplined. They read their scouting reports. I mean, everything should be in line for them to keep Oklahoma City in check there, and they just haven't been able to do it. And so I think Popovich is feeling like he needs to stay big. And when you stay big, even if you're the Spurs, if you have two traditional bigs on the court at the same time, your offense is just going to look uglier and clunkier than a spread look.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they're playing David West as much as they have been. And Duncan, I mean, Duncan was active tonight more so. I mean, he first of all played more, but Duncan doesn't make a whole lot of sense either at this point. And like at some point they've got to switch it up.
I feel you. And I think that they think it's a pick your poison situation because they think if they go away and they really try to go small with LaMarcus and I guess Diaw or however you want to do it at the 4 and 5, they're just worried that they can't rebound well enough and that they're going to lose it that way. But I think they've reached a point where they've got to change something up. And then the other big issue to me is that Parker can't break anybody down off the dribble, you know? And so that's another reason why the offense,
he was punishing Russ early on. And I think asking him to do that for 7 games and be sort of like the catalyst for everything else is asking a little bit too much at this point.
Yeah. Maybe it's in series fatigue. I mean, maybe that's what's happening, but just the lack of,
I mean, I would be exhausted trying to deal with Russ every night.
Yeah. Well, that's true. So we shouldn't be too hard on Tony for that. But I think that's another reason why the offense looks choppy, because you're not getting those skip passes, those extra passes around the perimeter, because you don't have anybody starting that. And when Kawhi drives, you know, he's not usually driving to set up that kind of an offensive look. He's driving to look for his own shot. And we should give Kawhi a little bit of love. I love his little, I don't know what you call it, his hook shot, his push shot that he takes from anywhere from like 8 to 10 feet in has just been so fun to watch. It was, again, in this game 5, it was pretty. But look.
Can I tell you what I liked?
What's that?
So mid fourth quarter, the Thunder were down 6. And Russ pulls up from 30 feet for the 3.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next possession down, Durant hits the 3 to tie it. I'm sitting in my living room just like, holy shit. Like, that's the Thunder experience right there. That's why everybody has been obsessed with this team, dissecting this team, like psychoanalyzing everybody. Because when it's good, there's just nothing better. It was like, I mean, they were down and I was convinced that it was pretty much over because the Spurs are like, they close everyone out at home in the fourth quarter. And then, I mean, yep, those guys, when they turn it on, they're nobody can touch them.
Totally. I think you're right. That was the turning point of the game, that Russ 3, because one, late clock, super deep.
Which was a horrible shot.
Shot. I mean, that shot's that's an 18% shot, you know, and he hits that. And it was also right after San Antonio looked like they had been building some momentum. You know, Kawhi has that dunk. You know, so it looked like, hey, here comes the pull away that you were talking about. And it just never happened. And you know, this, you know, the Spurs right now are starting to remind me of the Spurs I hated watching against the Clippers in last year's first round, because we're so used to them having the answers and having the counters as the series continues, you know, against the Heat or, you know, against the Thunder in previous postseason battles. And this is almost playing out very similar to the Clippers series, where the longer the series goes, the more guys they're trying to cover up for.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, tonight, especially in the second half, granted, I only saw the second half, but you could see they look a step slower than the Thunder. I mean, right on down the roster, Steven Adams, Deion Waiters, Russ, KD, everybody is just sort of moving a little bit faster than the Spurs, and they're harder to deal with. And I mean, that's definitely not a good sign for San Antonio.
Oh, not at all. And I think the nervousness has started for sure. And now you've got all these questions kind of looming before game 6, which is, okay, if it's Duncan's last game, then is it Manu's last game? And those are not the kinds of questions that you want to be answering in the second round of the playoffs. I mean, after a 67 win season, you know,
it's like 4 days ago, people were talking about how Durant is going to leave Oklahoma City and go to San Antonio. I mean, like, things have really taken a turn here. I'm still kind of in shock. I mean, can we talk about Russ for a minute?
Yeah, I was planning. I had booked out actually 15 minutes on my Apple Watch for you to just talk about Russell Westbrook. So please go ahead.
So first of all, I was out tonight and I was telling people that I had to leave to go watch this game. And someone overheard me, and it turned out it was Russell Westbrook's cousin.
What?
Who then showed me pictures of her with Russ and was like, he's just the nicest guy in the world off the court. He's great. And as soon as I hope they win tonight, because if they make the conference finals, I'm going down to Oklahoma. So very random aside there in our first ever micropod. But yeah, in general, Russ, like, if once you remember that he's a person, like he's had just such a psychotic 7 days here from the game over the weekend where he really, I mean, he was clearly too wired in and just like kind of lost it for them. And then even his pregame outfit that night, like he showed up in a Patagonia tank top, and it was like the Russ experience to like 150-175%, and it was just too much. And then he sort of dials it back and has like all of America saying that the Thunder are better when he's just sort of takes a backseat to Durant. And then tonight, I mean, he had turnovers in the first half, which I didn't see. And then, but just the second half, he just sort of like hit. It was the Russ that everyone has sort of loved and hated over the last couple of years. And that was exactly what they needed. And I just can't get over just how insane the whole experience has been the past week. And like it's sort of like the Thunder to the fullest extent. And it's I don't know, man. I cannot believe that they actually came back and got it done.
Well, I think a big part of it is that their margin for error is much, much bigger. Like they can withstand some of those late Westbrook turnovers, that really bad pass where he was getting down on himself. I think he was trying to hit Durant with that pass on the perimeter really late. They're able to withstand that because guys like Adams, Kanter, and Waiters are all making positive contributions. And all year long, I was skeptical that they'd be able to find the five-man lineup that would be able to hold up down the stretch. And even against the Spurs, you know, this big, weird lineup of kind of misshapen supporting pieces has held up beautifully tonight. And of course, we know the guys who are going to do the big time damage. It's Russ and KD. But getting extra shots, you know, in second chance opportunities, you know, having the physicality where San Antonio is not able to just pound it down low, having enough size to just totally neutralize Tim Duncan, having Waiters go on the ball at times, like, all of these things makes life easier for Westbrook, and it puts him in a position where his strengths can really rise to the top. And that's what I think happened in game five.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even love Westbrook that much. Not the way some people do. I'm just sort of awed by how insane this has all gotten. And the fact that they could, that he was able to rise to the occasion. And I think you're right. The athletic advantages elsewhere have definitely given them a margin for error in this series, because I mean, you look at Kanter, like the Spurs don't really have anybody who can punish him. I mean, do you see anybody like it? Cause LaMarcus, one of the weaknesses in his game has always been that he settles for those jumpers as opposed to sort of like bodying someone like Kanter or taking advantage. And then Adams has been someone that San Antonio definitely can't counter.
See, my thought for this whole series was going to be that Kanter just wouldn't be able to stay on the court because they would just pick and roll him to death. And that kind of assumed that guys like Parker and Ginobili were going to be able to get deep into the paint against him consistently and either draw fouls on him or just get really high percentage looks because he was screwing up his defensive coverages. And he's been passable on that end at worst, and at sometimes, you know, pretty darn good. Not always, but good for him, I guess, is probably the way to say it. And then what he does in terms of crashing the offensive glass, getting offensive rebounds in huge volume, scoring efficiently around the basket. I mean, those are just, he gives you that every single game.
So can I ask you something?
Yeah.
As a Portland resident, with LaMarcus, are you feeling a little bit, a former Portland resident, are you feeling a little bit of satisfaction to see him sort of come back to earth right now?
Oh, see, I was always on the other train. I mean, it always bothered me how much crap LaMarcus Aldridge got from Blazers fans. You know, people called him LaMarcia for being soft and, you know, always questioned him. And he never quite was able to get across his personality to the local media. And so I was always a LaMarcus Aldridge defender. I mean, I personally think he's still one of the top 15, 16, 17 players in the NBA. You know, his work early in the series is going to be really unfortunate for his reputation if he winds up having his best games early in the series and fades as it goes on, because that's sort of been the knock on him in other situations as well. But I think he's so solid in everything that he does that I was happy for him, number one, that he picked the Spurs, because I thought he made the right decision, because I wanted him to have a chance to, you know, potentially go deep in the postseason for the first time in his career. And I thought it was just a better fit for him culturally, personality-wise. And so I would like to see him kind of pull himself out of this and have a real chance to have a signature moment where he and Kawhi are able to deliver a series victory. Do I necessarily see that happening at this point? It's getting a little doubtful. I mean, he's still able to kind of have his way with guys like Ibaka, but he wasn't that central force in this game that he needs to be, and he wasn't able to hit pretty wide open, easy shots late in the game that would have been potential backbreakers. So I don't know how does he rebound from that in game six? I think that's a big question.
Yeah, it's pretty tough because some of those jumpers just get tougher in close games in the fourth quarter. I mean, I don't know whether there are numbers to support this, but though when you're relying on long jumpers, it's tougher to sustain down the stretch. And I mean, I've never felt one way or another about LaMarcus Aldridge. I was like kind of blown away. I didn't think he had it in him to start the series the way he did. And this is more what I expected, is a guy who can get you 20, 25 points a night, but is not going to be the guy that you can count on to carry you in a close game. And I think the Spurs need that guy right now.
Yeah, I think that guy is Kawhi Leonard, you know, and I think he's still feeling out the right way to do it. But he had some real moments of magic offensively in this game and also at other points in the series. I like his assertiveness even when he's matched up directly against Durant. That's a really long defender, but Kawhi goes...
That's been a wild matchup. Durant is hanging more than I thought.
Totally. And I mean, Kawhi going
on
right
defense,
at him.
I mean.
Yeah, yeah. When Kawhi goes right at him, which you love to see, because, you know, usually for a small forward, you know, Durant's length is going to kind of take away a lot of those opportunities around the basket. But Kawhi has sort of been undaunted and finding ways to kind of, you know, if he's going underneath the rim, coming back out the other side, if he's pulling up for the little push shot that I mentioned earlier. You know, I like what I've been seeing from him, especially tonight. He was forcing things, I thought, a little bit earlier in the series. You know, we talked about that last time, but
the Spurs reprogrammed him.
Yeah, exactly right. They just updated his software and he's good to go. Yeah,
it's all good. All right. So real quick, what's your gut right now on how this series goes from here?
Oh, man. Well, I think if you're San Antonio,
and what are you rooting for?
The whole time I wanted to see Spurs Warriors. I mean, that was my highest priority because I think ultimately they're the two best teams in the league. I love the storylines of sort of like, you know, teacher versus pupil between Popovich and Kerr. And then just all the matchups and the stylistic things that are going on, Duncan and Curry, you know, the history that could be made there. So to me, that's what I wanted to see. So I'm still kind of rooting for that. But at the same time, you know, don't take anything away from Oklahoma City. They're having a great series, especially after horrible game one. If they finish this off in game six, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And they've got San Antonio reeling right now. I think if you're the Spurs, though, really what you're trying to do is bunker down and say, look, we should be either up or already done with this series. There was two very insane late game officiating situations. One, the Waiters one, which just got totally out of control. And then I thought tonight, I mean, that was a terrible no call on Kawhi just tackling Russell Westbrook right in front of that referee. And there had been a previous dubious call, you know, with Danny Green getting shoved into Durant, and that led to free throws. I mean, those are really unfortunate situations. And if you're San Antonio, I think you have to adopt the mentality of like, look, if it wasn't for those weird end game situations that were kind of out of your control, you'd be up, what, you know, 3-2 or potentially 4-1, right? So I think you kind of have to talk yourself into it, because basketball wise, nothing else is really going right.
Yeah. So for me, I agree with you that the Spurs and Warriors, I mean, it would feel weird if we didn't get that at the end of the last 6 months.
Because we already didn't get it last year. That's the thing.
I know. It feels like we got robbed last year too. However, at this point, I mean, I really like the Spurs. I went down there to talk to Boris and met a bunch of them, and it was great. But I'm all in on the Thunder. I mean, like, just the energy of Russ and Durant and how psychotic this has all gotten. I mean, like, people are talking about KD's free agency openly at this point, and it's the fact that OKC has been able to sort of weather these storms, pardon the thunder pun, it's been too impressive for me not to, like, because I also think that athletically they can push Golden State in ways that San Antonio just may not have left at this point.
Well, we did talk about this, like, if you're coming off an ankle injury and then a knee injury, who's the last player in the world you want to have to play for 6 or 7 games?
You know? Yeah,
you're gonna have to hide Curry in the farthest reaches of the corner and let somebody else deal with him.
So that's a good segue. We have I capped the pod at 25 minutes. We've got 5 minutes to talk Steph, because that was just as incredible. I mean, that sometimes I feel bad for you being on the West Coast, because I think there's something special about being on the East Coast and staying up until 1 and 2 in the morning, and then Steph Curry is like, it feels like a hallucination. You're just like, holy shit, like, this is not a regular NBA game. This is a whole separate experience.
Well, I'll put my late night hallucinations up against anyone's. I was up writing my game column from that game last night until about 2 a.m. local time, and then I immediately filed a second column about Curry's MVP that kept me up until 5, and then I just got...
That's good, yeah. That's the Red Bull at work.
Yeah, and then I just got straight on a 7 a.m. flight and basically never slept. So, I'm hallucinating right now. It's great.
Yeah, that's great.
But in terms of that game...
I can't believe you were there. I mean, what was it like in the stadium?
It was absolutely bonkers. Fantastic. One of the better stretches of any basketball game I've seen, including games that had much higher stakes like the finals. It really felt to me like the most iconic and quintessential Steph Curry game that I've ever seen. I mean, you can go back and look, like, yeah, he had more points. I think he had 44 against the Spurs one time in the playoffs. Obviously, he had a couple of really nice games in the finals last year. He had that incredible corner three against the Pelicans, which will probably be, you know, on his highlight reel forever in the playoffs. But just in terms of the drama coming back from the injury, I mean, that's always been a huge part of his NBA origin story, right? Like, shaking off all the ankle injuries early in his career to kind of burst out onto the scene. It, like, that, you get that angle within a game almost. Then you have the idea that he can just sort of, you know, break your heart, but do it with a smile on his face the whole time. And you had that playing out in front of a Portland crowd that was totally energized and jacked up after a game. Game 3, frankly, they were nervous. And Draymond kind of called the Blazers out, saying that he thought they had some doubt. And I actually thought that the crowd had some doubt in game 3 too, but that was not the case at all in game 4. I mean, they were totally wired and into it. And so for Curry to, you know, shake through the struggles, have the confidence to not care, to trust his own process and his own shot, to get it back on track, and then to just completely explode for 17 points in overtime, outscoring the Blazers by himself. To me, that was like the quintessential Curry performance. I mean, everything boiled down from his entire career, his entire understanding of him as a basketball player and a superstar, all into one night. It was great.
It was a much cooler version of trusting the process with Steph last night. Because he started 0-for-10, and then to do what he did at the end, I mean, there's a lot of hyperbole and a lot of sort of the day after, everything is like the best game ever. But like, watching that game, it was just straight up Jordan. It was a Jordan type moment, and he's the guy that's produced that all year. So for me, that this is truly stuff that we've just never seen before, and that is going to stick with us for like a long time, because he's at a level that, I mean, I don't know, like 09 LeBron was there, I guess, but it wasn't like this. He just wasn't on this level. And Jordan's the only other guy who I've ever seen do stuff like this, where you're just, at no point did I expect the Warriors to lose. And then once he turned it on, I mean, for me watching that, the first couple of quarters were a little bit frustrating, because I was watching him worried almost, because I was just like, please don't be injured for the rest of the playoffs. I don't want to. And it was like, there was a little bit of dread. And then once he turned it on, in that overtime. I was like, all right, this dude's back. All is well. The rest of the league is screwed. It was great. Were fans there? Was there a sense that they were like, if we had to lose, at least we got to see Steph like turn into Jesus?
I mean,
was it straight up pissed off?
It was more heartbreak. I mean, that was at least my read on it. I mean, there was some drop jaws. I think the famous picture of Paul Allen kind of summarized things for a lot of people. Lots of groans and just sort of disbelief. But I mean,
the Paul Allen picture was amazing.
But so here's the thing, though. I mean, the Blazers didn't fold. You know, I mean, they kept pushing back. And so, you know, they really
I think they're part of what sort of brought that out of Steph. It was like Lillard and Aminu has showed up to the point where it kind of makes you rethink the future a little bit. Like he's at least a piece of a team that could be really good.
Yeah, I mean, they're really good right now. I mean, they pushed the Warriors in this series, no question about it. I mean, they're probably going to go down in five, but that's going to be one of the closer, tighter five-game series that you'll see, especially involving a team that's got like 70-plus wins. But, you know, the other thing about Steph, what I loved early in the game was when his outside shot wasn't going, he was able to find other ways to do it. He worked in for some of those mid-range shots to kind of get himself a little bit of rhythm, and then he did an unbelievable job of driving and kicking and hitting other three-point shooters, whether it was Draymond, whether it was Clay, and he was really a key for their offense kind of staying afloat because Portland just came out with so much energy and so much juice that it easily could have gotten away from them if Steph had just been totally out of sync and rusty like he looked at times. So it was a fantastic performance from Curry. And I guess my question to you is, like, can you remember a better performance from Curry in the playoffs? Like, I mean, to me, that was the one.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because he's just done so many crazy things this season that, I mean, I don't really delineate between games that I watch in the playoffs and regular season stuff. I mean, I saw him score 51 in DC, but he's like, that's just who he is. I mean, the crazy thing with Steph is that wasn't that out of the ordinary for him to just sort of go off and take over like that. And I mean, I think we've all been making the Paul Allen look at some point this year watching Steph. You know who that game must have been rough on is LeBron James.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, like the Cavs are playing so well right now. And then you look up and it's like, I don't know if any other team will matter if Steph's on that level.
Well, spoiler alert, we both participated in a Cavs roundtable, and you probably, like me, were feeling very bullish on the Cavs and talking about...
I know. Yeah. Cut my Cavs optimism in half.
Yeah, so yeah, for the magazine, we had this roundtable, like, you know, how can the Cavaliers, you know, are they prepared to, you know, get past the Warriors this time, you know, tell us about these positive indicators from their two sweeps, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like way all in, like, oh, LeBron looks so much better. Less is more. Kyrie stepped up. Everything's going perfectly. They've got enough weapons. They're playing more small ball. They can keep up in shootouts, you know? And I was like talking myself into that. And then like 12 years later, it was like, oh, wait a minute. No, nobody can keep up in a shootout with Steph Curry. That's just never going to happen. So.
Yeah, it's tough. But this has been a good first emergency playoff pod. I don't know. Do we have plans for the rest of the week?
I'm sure we do. We'll probably figure that out later. I want to leave you with one stat, though.
I'm still in shock. I just, whatever. Yeah, give me the stat.
Okay, so Kobe Bryant's final game. He had 22 made shots, 50 total shots, correct? 22 for 50.
Yeah.
That was his farewell tour finale. Tim Duncan's entire playoffs, 9 games, he's 15 for 38. I mean,
see, if Timmy could take more notes from Kobe, from the Mamba.
Doesn't that hurt? Doesn't that just hurt? 9
that's
games.
That's the solution. That's the solution to the Spurs issues. Is Duncan's going to come out and jack up 33s next game and they'll be straight.
All I'm saying is if they're down 20 at halftime of game 6, he better get some looks. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. We will be back soon. And Mamba out.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.